This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Let's get right into this. Robert Flores was on with the guys in the afternoon yesterday with Ron the Show Hughley, and Wade Smith was in for Clint Sterner. And here's Robert Flores, MLB Network. Here are his thoughts on what's going to happen with Carlos Correa after the season.
Pure speculation on my part, Carlos Correa is playing his last season in Houston. He will not return to the Astros next year. I don't know that for sure. I haven't heard from anything. I'm just saying speculation, looking at all the other factors, he's gone. I think he'll play somewhere next year. Where that will be, who knows? New York Yankees. You know, that's just my opinion.
All right. So the key part there at the end, Seth, to me is where that'll be, who knows? Because I think that people that just assume Carlos Correa is gone have not done the research yet on what that market's going to look like after the season. I'll get to that in just a second. But let's start with the Astros side of the equation here. Okay, why would Carlos Correa come back here? We know that Jim Crane had kind of made him what is certainly going to look like a low ball offer after Carlos Correa finishes up the season that he seems to be on track to having right now. He's had a great season so far. So it comes down to how attractive are the Astros to remain here for Carlos, and what's the Astros' wherewithal to pay him market value? We know that there's some big contracts that come off the books after this year. Almost $60 million in salary comes off the books with Verlander and Greinke. Unfortunately, you've got some good young arms to backfill those guys. You got McCullers locked up long term. Oh, you got Odorizzi for another year. Now, the young arms, Framber, Urquidy, Garcia, Javier, you know, just, and depending on maybe one of those guys gets moved in a trade. But for now, those guys are all on the team. So they've got the financial wherewithal, one would think, to do it. And Crane has always been willing to invest resources. And I think Crane likes Correa. And then from a Carlos perspective, you look at it, you go, okay, well, just purely from a quality of life standpoint, this is the team he came up with. The guys who he's closest to seemingly on this team are all locked into this team for the next 4 years. Bregman, McCullers, who was in his wedding, you know, Altuve, they're all locked up through at least 2024. So that's the Astros side. Like, I think if the Astros are trying to make a case to Carlos to overcome whatever bunged up feelings there are from maybe what he saw as a low ball offer, I think there's enough ammunition there to do that. Before I get into what the market looks like, do you agree with me so far on the Astros side of the equation?
Yeah. I think that that makes sense.
Okay. So now here's the key part, and this is the part where I think Flores, things fall apart a little bit, is where he goes, I don't know where it's going to be, but he's going to make a lot of money. Now, to be clear, there are candidates out there. There are teams out there that can spend money on Carlos Correa. But I went and did the research last night, and just based on payrolls this year, I went to SpotRack, I looked up all the payrolls for teams, and you know the average payroll cuts right in the middle of the league. Like the average payroll, there's 15 teams above the average, 16 teams below the average. The teams below the average are the teams that you would seem to think, Seth, you know, it's the smaller markets, it's the teams that are always in rebuild mode, it's the teams that are never signing big-ticket free agents like Carlos Correa. The only team in that lower part of that I could see making a run at him, purely based on geography and being in a new ballpark, is the team they played last night, the Texas Rangers. I could see the Rangers trying to fire one across the bow at the Astros, but I think we can virtually eliminate half the league just based on financial constraints. So chop off half the league other than the Rangers.
Just the teams that just flat out, and it's not financial constraints in that they're up against the luxury taxes. They just don't spend money.
They don't spend money. Yeah. It's financial constraints in that their TV contracts are not the Yes Network. You know what I mean? Or the Dodgers. So and Carlos, I don't think. But Carlos seems like more of a big market kind of guy anyways. So there's that. So now we got 15 teams that are sort of above the average. And these are the markets that start to look more familiar for a guy like Carlos Correa is going to be. I've said all along, look, a lot of these teams, and when it comes to shortstop, seats taken. You know what I mean? Like when Forrest Gump gets on the bus as a kid, like, sorry, seats taken. I'll start at the top. The Dodgers. Corey Seager's a free agent. They're going to re-sign Corey Seager. They're not signing Carlos Correa. The Yankees have Gleyber Torres signed up through 2024. He's their shortstop right now. And Flores sits there and goes, ugh, cough, Yankees. But the Yankees have been a lot more frugal than they normally are lately, not wanting to go over the luxury tax. They're number two in payroll. Number three in payroll is the Mets. Well, they've signed Francisco Lindor from now until Rapture. Like, he's their shortstop. Fourth on the list is the Astros. So they're already a team that's spending in this range. And then you start to get into Philadelphia. You know, Philadelphia and the Angels at 5 and 6. Okay, the Angels scare me a little bit. They don't have long-term solutions at shortstop. But then you get to 7, 8, 9. Xander Bogaerts, Boston. Fernando Tatis, San Diego. Trey Turner, Washington. 11th is the Cubs. Javier Baez, he's a free agent after this year. And Bo Bichette with Toronto is having an amazing year. He's not a free agent. He's a young player. He's 23 years old. They're not going after Carlos Correa in Toronto. Mm-hmm. They're still suffering sticker shock from signing the Astros free agent, big ticket guy from last year in George Springer. Seth, I think when you boil it all down, the teams that we would normally be super scared of, the New York teams, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Cubs, they're teams that already either have solutions at shortstop or their shortstops themselves are free agents along with Carlos Correa, and you'd think they'd be inclined to sign their own guy. I mean, I think it's going to boil down to the Angels, the Rangers, maybe the Cardinals in the mix, but I don't think it's as robust a market as people think it's going to be.
And I guess the other big wild card, though, too, is, okay, some of those teams in the bottom 15 do become teams that are in the top 15 and spending. The Padres, you know, the Padres 2 years ago were 25th in the league in team payroll.
Yeah.
Where now they're in the top 10 or so.
They're eighth.
You know, they're like a team that was very much willing to pay for their really good shortstop.
Yeah.
So I think that there's going to be enough of a market. I guess the question just is, yeah, is that 10-year deal out there? It's the Astros are going to be super, super loath to ever sign a 10-year deal to the point where, like, you know, they might never do it, but things change, times change. If they could justify it financially because Carlos Correa helps put butts in the seats, then that goes a long way towards it. But I guess the other side of it, Sean, is that people might not realize that the Astros have a lot more money next year than they do right now. There's a whole lot of money coming off the books with Verlander and Greinke.
Yep. Yeah, $57 million to be exact is coming up.
So I guess what you're saying is that there's just you're making an argument that the Astros have a much better chance of retaining.
100%, 100%. I went through this research yesterday and I came away. I don't think it's. The favorite is probably he's still going somewhere else because of the exact dynamic you pointed out that they may not want to go as long on a contract as Carlos is looking for. My counter argument is I don't know that the teams that would normally be willing to shell out 10 years. Are in the market, A, for a shortstop, or in the case of, say, Philadelphia, who's got Didi Gregorius, old-ass Didi Gregorius as their shortstop. Like, they're in the market for a shortstop sometime here in the near future, but they've already given Bryce Harper a 13-year deal. Like, some of these teams, they may look at it more like, are we in the market for a shortstop, or, boy, can we really stand to give out another 10-year deal to somebody? Yeah. Like, do we really want to be having three 10-year guys on our team?
The Yankees, as you mentioned, the Yankees are trying to stay under the luxury tax, and their little experiment, you know, ever since they started trying to be fiscally responsible, they can't seem to make it much further past the ALDS most years. But that's just that's the life of a Yankees fan. You're probably never going to win another World Series now that you have to be fiscally responsible. I wonder, is there a potential for... would there be a potential perhaps for Correa to get signed there and move Gleyber over to third or something.
I think that scares me a little bit because Gleyber Torres is a good player, but he's not Corey Seager or Lindor or Tatis, certainly, where you go, no, that's our – or Bogarts, where you go, that's our shortstop. We're not moving.
Yeah, and they got Gio Urshela at third base, so it's not like those are immovable objects or anything.
No,
because really all it takes is the Yankees and the Angels both wanting you.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, boom, there you got a 10-year deal.
Again, I think the favorite is that he leaves, but I went through this exercise and said, I don't know that the market – I don't think every big market team, even close to it, is going to be lining up to sign Carlos Correa, either out of need or fear. The thing that scares me about the Yankees is his relationship with Alex Rodriguez. They're very close. If I'm not mistaken, when he changed agents, he did it on the advice of Alex Rodriguez, and Alex Rodriguez is still a card-carrying homer for the New York Yankees.
The thing that I'd like about that, trading Correa to the Yankees, I can't root for it right now, Sean, because it would involve Carlos Correa continuing to have injury issues onto the future. But as much as Yankees fans gloated about getting Gerrit Cole, and now it looks like their most favorite lifelong Yankees fan might end up just reverting back to his Pittsburgh Pirate ways without his sticky stuff. I would love if the Yankees, after whiffing on Gerrit Cole and spending all that money, somehow also whiffed on Carlos Correa. That would be fun to see and watch.
Yeah, it would involve us rooting against Correa. But once Correa, especially if he goes to the Yankees, sorry Carlos, we're going to be rooting against you. Now, I will congratulate Carlos and Daniela. Did you see on Instagram yesterday, Seth? They are having a little Carlos or Carlitos. We don't know. It could be they didn't specify boy or girl, but Carlos Correa's wife Daniela is pregnant.
So what they're probably due, when do you announce it? Like after 2 months or 3 months, whenever it is? So they're probably
been a while for me. I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know what I don't know what the MO is these days in 2021. Congratulations to them. We'll have to check their baby registry and see if we can get them a gift from Payne and Pendergast.
As an update, by the way, my fantasy of Gerrit Cole flaming out after they cracked down on the sticky stuff.
Yeah.
He is still sitting at a 2.31 ERA.
Oh, that'll change. He was bitching about it last night in the press conference. Yeah.
Well, I know he was bitching about it, but he let up 2 runs in 8 innings pitched. So I think he was bitching about it, but he was probably more comfortable bitching about it because he had just turned in a really good performance. Where if he had just let up 5 runs in 4 innings or something and then bitched about the lack of sticky substances, then that might be another
excuses.
Deal.
Yeah, it would have looked like an excuse maker. All right. A baseball writer dropped some cheating accusation bombs all over MLB yesterday. As an Astro fan, do you care or do you just want to move on? That's next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week 1? The local conversations about the team you love, all streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
So, Seth, this got a lot of run yesterday. There's a baseball writer by the name of Ryan Spader. He's an MLB. His Twitter bio says MLB analyst, author, host, statistician, writer, retired senior hedge fund account manager, blah, blah, blah. He's somebody who covers Major League Baseball. He's got 64,000 Twitter followers. He's got a blue check mark. And I've had him on my national show before. He's a legit baseball reporter.
And he's been, at times, he's been critical of the Astros, which we should point out, too.
Okay.
Or at least I've seen him before be critical. So it's not like this is some Astros fan or anything.
Yes.
Who's about to say all this stuff that you're going to tell us.
Yeah, he kind of had a bearing of his soul, it felt like. He went to bed on June 16th, the night of June 16th, or around midnight on June 15th, and he tweeted around midnight, "I've had enough. I think I'm coming out with everything tomorrow, going to sleep on it." So he went to bed, and he woke up, Ryan Spader did, and he tweeted, "Everything that I'm about to say was verified by more than one player. I do not mean to burn anyone, and I love baseball. I've just had enough of this BS." Here we go. The Royal, he just starts going Michael Corleone on baseball over the last 5 years. This is what he does. There was nobody safe from the figurative machine gun that was Ryan Spader throwing cheating accusations out there at baseball yesterday.
Yeah, that's what this is all. It's all regarding various teams cheating, various players cheating, all of that.
Yeah.
It's his way of saying, look, the Astros are being scapegoated here in a lot of ways, and he's had enough of it.
Yeah, and maybe even some preemptive fodder for people that are going to get scapegoated for putting sticky stuff on a baseball. You know for Garrett Cole.
Yeah.
And that's probably what's driving a lot of the cheating conversation is the baseball putting out the new rules about sticky substances on baseballs. All right, here we go. Here's who he went after. The Royals were the first team with a full analytics and video department close by their dugout, doing so in 2015, their World Series championship year. How they used it, I don't know.
Yeah, that one I didn't know quite what to make of, because that's not, I guess that's as circumstantial as it gets, but there you have it.
I like to think he's spot on that one, because who beat the Astros in the postseason that year? The Royals. So now we can act like the jilted Yankees and Dodgers. Like, oh, we got robbed in 2015 of a World Series. All right, that's number one. Next one, speaking of the Yankees. The Yankees had cameras in left, center, and right, all pointing at the pitcher's glove rather than the catcher to pick up the pitcher's grip. And he justifies this by giving Aaron Judge's home and road splits in 2017 and 2018. All you need to know is that Aaron Judge, his splits at home were much, much better than on the road his first 2 years in baseball.
Right.
There's a 200-point difference in his slugging percentage.
And I guess that's where it gets circumstantial again, because it's not illegal to have the paint. It's not illegal to be, or at least at the time, it's not illegal to film any of that stuff, as long as you're doing it from a legal location. But what you do from it is whether you're offering information up in real time or not.
Yes, in-game.
Is what they're concerned about.
Yep.
And this was, and again, this actually supports the Astros' cause for the most part. This was all very much a gray area back then.
Yep.
People knew the Yankees were doing some really, really high-tech stuff for a long time.
Next one, baseball writer Ryan Spader just going full tilt on cheaters yesterday, alleged cheaters. The Dodgers had an employee who was caught setting up cameras at Minute Maid Park wearing an MLB polo shirt when he should have been wearing a Dodgers polo during the 2017 World Series.
I don't know what to make of that one.
That's one I've heard before.
Yeah, I guess when I first read it, I thought it said that he was wearing an Astros shirt, which that would have seemed more scandalous, but he was wearing an MLB polo. It sounds like maybe he just was wearing an MLB polo.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could see myself doing something like this. Was he setting him up in illegal areas or whatnot? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, next one. This one I don't really care. Ryan Spader says, "This one hurts to say, my favorite player ever, quote, Chase Utley was the biggest cheater of all time," end quote. It sounds like a few people told him that Chase Utley was a big cheater. Moving along. I don't care about
this. But he was on the Dodgers in 2017.
Was he? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so
I remember him from the Phillies, when he was
winning
MVPs.
he was a dirty, stinking Dodger in 2017. So right. for what they're whining about, one of the biggest cheaters of all time, according to this one writer, was on the Dodgers that year.
Yeah, he tainted that one with "my favorite player ever." I'm like, oh, poor Ryan Spader. By the way, Ryan Spader is going to be on with the afternoon guys today at 2:30. Ryan Spader says this: "As insane as this sounds, I've heard this from multiple players. Adrian Beltre had a buddy with binoculars in dead center who would wave a beater, an undershirt, he calls it a beater, if he was getting something off speed in 2017, like he did with Judge. He gave Beltre's home and away splits in 2017. Needless to say, the home splits, his batting average is about 90 points higher at home than it was away. Seth, do you believe that Adrian Beltre, who was probably about 80 years old at the time in 2017, had an octogenarian buddy of his out there in center field with binoculars and a T-shirt?
I honestly wouldn't be surprised by that, just because there have been so many stories through the years in baseball of various players having people out in the outfield.
Right.
That's where I like it, to the point where I'm shocked that there aren't even more stories, because it seems like such an easy way. People are allowed to have binoculars. People are allowed to have T-shirts. People, all that stuff. It seems like especially on the road or at home, you could pull that off pretty easily.
He said that everything Eric Kratz said about the Rockies — this is a former catcher who I believe played for the Astros at one point — he accused the Rockies of cheating.
Using the Theragun on the bench.
That's right.
The Rockies,
that's
right?
Yeah. He says, Ryan Spader says, the Astros sign-stealing method all came from Carlos Beltran, New York and Texas, he says. So.
Which, you know, that's what the original report said last year. And that, by some people, it's funny. People were acting like that was brand new news, and that's what we've all known here in Houston, was that it was reported that Carlos Beltran said that the Astros were way behind the times when it came to sign stealing. And I think what Ryan Spader is saying here was what we've said.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that those teams taught him that, but that's where he came from, both the Rangers and the Yankees in the prior 2 years. The funniest thing about this to me, Sean, was I saw a couple different Rangers fans saying, like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. The Rangers are awful. Why would you accuse them of cheating? Like, you've dumbass, you claim to be a Rangers fan. They won 95 games in 2017 when Carlos Beltran was there. What the hell are you talking about? Nobody's accusing them of doing it right now. They're talking about what might have been done in the past.
I feel like there's only like 6 Rangers fans in the world. I feel like we could pretty easily identify the ones that are saying stupid things like that.
Half of them are down at Kima Boardwalk at any given time.
Yes.
I've pushed a lot of children into the water down there because they're wearing Rangers hats.
How about this one?
This time of year especially.
Ryan Spader.
Take a swim, kid.
Ryan Spader says the Diamondbacks used humidor balls when pitching and non-humidor balls when batting at home. Spader says, I don't have a time frame on this, but I'm confident that it happened. For those who don't know, when you store baseballs in a humidor, it deadens them. When you don't, then they have a little more juice to them. He's saying the Diamondbacks used whichever balls were convenient for whether they were batting or pitching at the time.
Is it? Oh, and they're all supposed to be the same.
Yeah.
Does Major League Baseball not? Because a bunch of teams have humidors now.
But you're supposed to. They're saying the balls that the Diamondbacks used weren't actually stored in when they were batting, weren't actually stored in humidors.
That seems like it would be easy to police, or at least that baseball should be doing it.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this was. I mean, stuff that he kind of consolidated a lot of reports we've seen about various things. And he's saying, like, look, I've heard this from other players too. Hey, I'll say, going back to 2017, I know that the Astros themselves were very concerned about other teams and what they were doing to monitor pitches. Remember Lance McCullers commented to some fan who claimed that there's no way that the Yankees would know that he was about to throw 24 straight curveballs.
Yeah.
Lance was just like, oh, they knew.
Yeah.
Lance was as vocal as anybody else after the 2017 World Series, saying, hey, Major League Baseball has to crack down on this.
Yeah.
Because the Astros, whether the Astros are right or wrong, or whether you want to believe it or not, the Astros themselves believed that other teams out there were doing a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And they felt like they had to keep up. Maybe they went above and beyond, or maybe they were just doing what a bunch of other teams were doing. But for whatever it's worth, the Astros definitely felt like other teams were using space-age stuff to try to steal signs.
Seth, there was a time where a string like this would have moved me to say, oh, look, awesome, vindication. Oh, and granted, there's no sources cited here or anything like that.
Yeah.
Now, Ryan Spader will be on with the afternoon guys, and I'm sure there's stories behind that you can dig into when you converse with somebody who just fires off the tweets. Be honest with you, this was a good litmus test for me yesterday when all these tweets came out. I'm kind of over all this stuff, man. Like, I'm kind of like, okay. Everybody was doing things with humidors and little flashing lights and T-shirts and this and that. I'm ready to move on from all of it, you know?
Well, you know what's helping, though, too, Sean, is how good the Astros offense is this year. I think that this, in a lot of ways, I think Astros fans this season, as opposed to last year's regular season, Astros fans this season are able to be a little bit more self-assured and say, look, they're really good hitters. There's a bunch of advanced analytical studies that show that the cheating didn't actually help out the Astros overall anyway. And we're just going to move on and be comfortable and secure in the fact that Yuli and Altuve and Correa and Bregman, when his hamstrings aren't messed up, they're all good hitters, and that's the end of it.
Yep. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Again, Ryan Spader, who fired off all those tweets about the cheating yesterday, he'll be on with the afternoon guys today at 2:30. Is there J.J. Watt drama in Arizona? That's next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. The Around the NFL podcast, Seth, you brought this to my attention yesterday. You've been on that podcast before, have you not? The Around the NFL podcast?
Oh, yeah.
So you're friendly.
At least once a year. Usually when they want to ask about Jack Easterby or something.
Right. That's the Greg Rosenthal et al. Podcast, right? He's one of the handful of people on that podcast.
Yes. Yeah.
So they were talking yesterday. Typical podcast at an hour, and they had a bunch of different topics they were kind of rapid firing through, but one of the interesting ones was they were talking about Arizona and Chandler Jones, and I feel like we're more in tune with Arizona the last couple of years than we've been as Houstonians at any time, because there seems to be a pipeline of Texans that are now in Arizona playing for the Cardinals. Most prominently, DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt. But this, I thought, was interesting. Chandler Jones apparently has been a little sideways with the Cardinals the last couple of years. He's played well. He was banged up for most of last year, only played in five games. But the 4 years before that, he played in every game, and he was double-digit sacks every year. He's been one of the best pass rushers in football. He is now joined by J.J. Watt on that defensive line, and I think the thinking is, boy, these two are going to really form a dynamic duo. But on this podcast, they speculated that Chandler Jones might not be all there for the Cardinals right now.
I honestly wonder how much the J.J. Watt hullabaloo led to Chandler Jones being unhappy.
I think that's it. And I asked around, and that suspicion was confirmed. When a player
texted rap
as good
sheet
as Chandler Jones, and to be clear, he's, you know, on balance probably been a little better than J.J. Watt over the last few years, is on a team, and then you sign a new player who is a couple years older, and he's making more money than you, that gets on your radar big time, and Chandler Jones hasn't shown up. And if you remember how he left New England, it was a very strange, sudden sort of, Chandler Jones is gone. He had some weird off.
Well,
the
there
field
was also an event that it could
right
tied
there was
to
a
that
strange,
exciting,
like a bath
event
salts
yeah
type
he
event or
he
something
showed up to a police station asking for help
synthetic
and was under
drugs
the influence
yeah
of drugs. So that was strange. But there's been some
that
whispers
will move your
here
career along.
That there's been some whispers. He's been a great player there. I do have doubts whether he's going to be on the Cardinals in 2021. Would not shock me if he gets traded in August.
Okay, so that's interesting. Okay, it wouldn't shock the host, one of the hosts, yeah, if Chandler Jones got traded in August. Mind you, Chandler Jones, yeah, who I think J.J. within the last 3 or 4 days posted a picture of him and Chandler Jones in their Cardinal uniforms in some sort of superhero pose or something.
Yeah, no, it was what they were doing, the Photoshop, yeah, and Chandler Jones was there. Some people thought, or excuse me, not the Photoshop, the photo shoot.
Yeah.
Some people claimed that it was a Photoshop, and J.J. confirmed that, no, that was me and Chandler Jones being happy together in front of the camera.
Okay.
Two things can be true. Chandler Jones could be completely fine with J.J. Watt, the person, but Chandler Jones could also be upset that they paid somebody other than him a lot of money when Chandler Jones wants a new contract. And that's these are things that happen on professional teams sometimes.
Yeah.
You might feel like, yeah, one of my best friends is my fellow defensive lineman, but they just gave him more money, and my professional opinion is that I'm a better football player than him. So that could be true. The one thing that they alluded to, and that was Dan Hanzus, Mark Sessler, and Greg Rosenthal talking okay there. And they work for NFL.com. They're plugged in. That's why Dan Hanzus was joking about Greg Rosenthal calling Ian Rappaport, because they work for the NFL. So Greg is very plugged in. The other part of it, too, is it's not just that Chandler Jones had that weird incident in New England where he was under the influence of something and he showed up at a police station shirtless and paranoid.
Synthetic marijuana is what it was, which was legal at the time.
I know, but did we know for sure? Because that was back when they were blaming everything on synthetic marijuana.
It said it in his Wikipedia page. I researched it yesterday, so it's got to be true.
Oh, it did?
Wikipedia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Remember the guy bit that other guy's face off in Florida?
I do.
And everybody blamed bath salts or synthetic marijuana, and they're like, no, it was just good old normal drugs.
Right.
Yeah.
No, this guy's just really messed up. Yeah.
He's just that screwed up. So anyway, so the question is, that's right. This was a Nick Caserio joint. This was a guy that at one point Nick Caserio had helped scout and draft. And is there a chance that perhaps he would come down, make his way down to Houston? He doesn't seem like a Jack Easterby type of guy, per se. Now, I don't know. If it were just the bath salts, or excuse me, synthetic marijuana incident, I think all... Is one a subset of the other? Is synthetic marijuana a
Stay
subset
focused,
of bath
Seth.
Salts?
Stay on Chandler Jones.
Anyway,
yeah.
So he doesn't necessarily seem like maybe a Jack Easterby type of guy. But he also, and it's not just the bath salts episode or the synthetic marijuana episode. He does come from the prolific Jones family of John Jones,
yeah,
the MMA fighter.
That's true.
Arthur Jones, the brother who is a defensive lineman who seems to be the most normal, just average Joe of the three of them. Yeah. But then Chandler Jones. So like both John Jones of Chandler Jones, they've
They're
had some
there.
Erratic moments.
Yeah.
So I don't know if... Because people are asking, okay, could Chandler Jones find his way to Houston?
Patriots
South. Given that Caserio has a history with him, right. Yeah. I would not be opposed to it. It doesn't strike me as what the Texans would do right now, unless all of a sudden they ended up with a whole bunch of draft capital somehow, maybe by trading Deshaun Watson. So for those of you who have asked me, could the Texans land Chandler Jones, my answer would be yes, they could, but... No, they won't. I don't think it's going to happen.
No, he's 31 years old. Like his timeline.
Yeah.
We should lay this out. The contractual part is that Chandler Jones is in a contract year. He's set to make $15.5 million this year. J.J. Watt signed a 2-year deal with the Cardinals for about the same money. It's labeled as 2 years, $32 million, $16 million a year. There are incentives that get J.J. Watt to that number of sacks, things like that. I think J.J. is set to make $23 million guaranteed on those 2 years. So the money's in the same neighborhood. Chandler Jones just probably wants a new contract and feels like any high-ticket guy that's coming in might be taking his bag. You know what I mean? Like that. Well, yeah. Man, it looks like they're committed to J.J. for longer than they're committed to me. And contractually, they are. That's just a fact. They're committed to J.J. for at least a year and change with the guaranteed money. I thought this is just interesting, Seth, and I don't know that this matters one way or the other for how the Cardinals look at this. Do you believe that Chandler Jones has been the better football player over the last several years than J.J.? He's certainly been the more available football player over the last 5 years.
Availability matters, and yeah, I would. I think probably in terms of total productivity, he's been more productive than J.J.
I'm looking at the numbers. I'm just doing Chandler Jones since 2016, which was the year he got to the Cardinals. I think this is a good time for him to do it because that's the year he got to the Cardinals, and that's the year J.J.'s body started breaking down. And it's 5 seasons, so that's a good sample size. Chandler Jones has played 69 games. He has 62 sacks and 68 TFLs. So he's like a sack and a TFL per game for the last 5 years. J.J. has played in only 48 games, so 21 fewer games. He has 26.5 sacks, so far fewer sacks, 40 TFLs, so about the same there, 73 QB hits. They're about the same there. J.J.'s just ended up being able to get the quarterback on the ground as often as Chandler Jones has, and more importantly, hasn't played nearly as many games, although last season J.J. played all 16 and Chandler Jones played only 5. I think if I'm Chandler Jones, he should be looking at it as, man, having J.J. Watt is going to make my job a whole hell of a lot easier this year in a contract year, don't
right.
you think?
And I think that's it's also he's also got leverage and he wants to get paid.
Yeah.
There's another thing where two things can be true. He can be happy that J.J. Watt is there, but he can also say, hey, wait a second. I'm going to get while the getting's good. You guys are doling out money to pass rushers. Where's mine? It's just hard to hold out. I don't know. Players just don't have much leverage right now in this collective bargaining agreement. So I think that unless Chandler Jones really is going to make a huge stink out of it, I would imagine he's going to be there. I don't think that – I think that he probably just ends up having a really good year with J.J. Watt there and then maybe gets a deal from the Cardinals or gets somebody else. But you're exactly right about the age thing especially. I don't think he's going to end up with the Texans.
Yeah.
It's just not the right timing.
Yeah, the Texans, the type of player Chandler Jones is at that age and for what the price tag is going to be, I think the Texans are 2 years away from being in the market for players like that.
Well, and Chandler Jones is the prime example of the kind of guy that the Patriots used to let go all the time where, oh, yeah, he's a really good player, but for whatever reason, we're going to let him go, and we're going to keep winning Super Bowls, and that's why nobody will criticize us for it. If the Texans had let Chandler Jones go, I would have been extremely critical, except that you just don't know what that whole synthetic marijuana incident.
Yeah.
You just don't know what. Like, what more was there? What extra drama was there on the side?
Right. I would go so far as to say, Seth, independent of Chandler Jones, just in general, as we're talking about the Texans being in the market for players like this, is that until you've got your quarterback situation figured out, it doesn't make sense to invest in anybody that's big ticket beyond like a year or two. You know what I mean? Like, until you know who the quarterback is going to be for your team, then you're investing a ton of money, big signing bonuses in guys that are going to be helping you get to 6-10 or 7-9 most of the time. I realize the Texans are 4-12 with their great quarterback last year. I'm talking generally speaking in the NFL. Like, if you don't have the quarterback situation figured out to at the very least where you have the young quarterback that you're going to give it a go with for the next 3 years on your roster, you shouldn't be out there bidding on any guys like this.
The Texans are trying to win Lawn of the Year in the year 2023. So if you're trying to win Lawn of the Year in 2023 and you're starting from scratch, the first thing you're going to do is be sure you've got all your drainage right, you've got your topsoil in order, you've fertilized appropriately, and by all local ordinances, damn it, the algal blooms are getting to be too much, people. And that's what you're working on. So that's what the Texans are doing right now with a lot of these 1- and 2-year contracts. They're trying to figure out, okay, how can we build the boring stuff right now? Yeah. You're not going to spend money to go to implant like a couple of 10-year-old live oak trees or something on your lawn until you get all that other stuff right. So Chandler Jones would be like buying some fancy ornamental Japanese tree or something and plopping it down in the middle of a muddy mess where you don't even have the irrigation in or anything. The Texans are taking care of the basics right now. They'll buy their Chandler Jones bonsai trees somewhere down the road, but it's just not the time right now.
Seth, if this doesn't end with you giving a plug to Lewis Florey, then I'm just going to be completely disappointed in you.
this is the stage where you would bring Lewis Florey in and say, Lewis, I want to plant some trees here within the next couple of years.
Yeah.
What do I need to do to make it the right environment? And then he'll work with you. He'll be there for you because, damn it, he knows trees and he knows this Houston climate, soil conditions, all of that.
Amen.
And it's not so easy to be a tree in Houston.
It is not.
Sean.
No.
That's why you want Lewis Florey on your side.
There you go. See, I set you up right there, Lewis Florey. You're welcome, Lewis Florey. All right. There you go. Let's get to headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, today's headlines, we start with the Astros, who last night, we'll start with the good. They won last night. So they sweep the Rangers in a 2-game series. White Sox coming to town this weekend. This should be a lot of fun. The White Sox, one of the best teams in baseball. Dallas Keuchel's going to be starting on Sunday against Lance McCullers, so that'll be a lot of fun. But last night they won 8-4. It was the long ball that got the job done last night. 6 home runs, several of them against former Astro Jordan Lyles, who it was pointed out by many people is a spitting image of Seth Payne. Other than being bad at sports, Seth is good at sports. Jordan Lyles is bad at sports.
I don't see it, personally.
You don't see Jordan Lyles being bad at sports? He's really
bad. Looking like me, necessarily.
I think it was
John Rocker and I look alike, and he didn't believe me until late one night when we were at the Super Bowl. He looked into my eyes, and he was like, oh, crap, I do look like you.
I feel like I'm looking at myself.
Why'd you have to sound so disappointed in that? Come on, man.
Yeah.
It's not that bad. Look, you should be wanting to look more like somebody else. All right, Rocker.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's not always easy being John Rocker.
No. So 6 home runs last night, including a leadoff home run from Jose Altuve. Seth, you want a stat? I'm going to give you a stat here. You ready? Tell me. I'm bouncing this off the ultimate stat nerd. When Jose Altuve hits a leadoff home run this year,
yeah,
he's done it 6 times. The Astros' record in those games is 6-0, and they've outscored the opposition in those 6 games 41-12.
Oh wow!
So my
41-12.
41-12.
Okay.
So my layperson take on that, I'm gonna let you put this through your stat nerd grinder here in a second. But my layperson take on that is, wow, these leadoff home runs really start the momentum early in the game. And it helps the Astros kind of ride the wave and set fear in the heart of the opponents to where, on average, the Astros are beating these 6 teams in these games by an average score of 7-2 in each of those games. Does my theory hold any validity that a leadoff home run is almost worth more than a regular solo home run during the game because of the tone that it sets?
It is, because it was one thing when George, Sean, I've done my Bayesian analysis on this. You're 100% correct.
Thank you.
And a lot of it has to do with the fact that when George Springer did it, at least it was a big 6'3" strapping lumberjack of a man doing it to you. And that was enough to unsettle you with a leadoff home run. But when Altuve does it, there's just this, atavistic response where you realize, oh, wow, their smallest player just embarrassed me and trounced me. I'm just going to go ahead and start giving up home runs to Miles Straw, Chaz McCormick, Martin Maldonado.
Yeah.
All is lost, especially to us, these hapless Texas Rangers, Arlington, actually. I think you're 100% correct on that, Sean.
What is the word you just used? Atavistic?
Oh, atavistic.
What
is
that?
It's like primordial, kind of from prehistoric times.
Oh, okay. I've never heard that word before.
I've been reading too much lately, and then all these big words fly out. I apologize. Kids,
if you're listening, there's no such thing as reading too much.
No, there is.
We're trying to promote
totally
literacy.
Is. No, no. Get out and live life. Reading's for losers.
I wish the Wade Smith Foundation had an event this week.
No, reading too much is for losers.
Seth is starting his own foundation to combat the Wade Smith Foundation for Literacy. I'm taking dead aim at the scourge of society, which is literacy.
Sean, sometimes I read too much. Yesterday, when I was supposed to be doing a little bit of research on the Astros, I was reading the book Collision Low Crossers about the 2011 New York Jets. That's reading too much.
That is.
There was no reason. I wasted like an hour and a half on the 2011 New York Jets, which is fascinating, but it wasn't what I needed to be doing. So there's such a thing as reading too much.
All right, the other thing that happened last night with the Astros game, they won 8-4, 6 home runs. Jose Altuve hit 2. Chaz McCormick hit 2. Miles Straw hit a home run. Martin Maldonado hit a home run. They were giving up home runs to a bunch of guys who don't normally – actually, a bunch of guys who don't normally hit him. Chaz has 8 now, and Altuve leads the damn team. Miles Straw hitting a home run was a little unsettling, but that was but it was good to see. The bad news from last night's game. Good news, they won. Bad news, Alex Bregman, which this was kind of forecasted by Seth Payne on the show yesterday.
Stop it.
I was going to explain. I didn't
forecast squat.
Pointed out that Alex Bregman is not running very well this year, and there might be an issue with his hamstring. You pointed that out. Now, to be fair, it was a quad that got yanked last night by Alex Bregman, not a hamstring. But as you pointed out, Seth, that they're all sort of intertwined and interconnected, and that any sort of leg issue there's going to be a ripple effect. At any rate, trying to beat out a double play grounder in the first inning, Alex Bregman pulled a quad. Dusty Baker does not sound optimistic about Alex Bregman coming back anytime soon.
That was a downer, because the first thing we saw when he came up limping, you know, we thought it was that hamstring again. And indeed, it was a different muscle in his leg. And, you know, the way he just walked in the clubhouse, you know, we knew it wasn't a good sign. So, like I said, it's we hate to lose him for any period of time, and hopefully we have him back relatively soon.
I mean, you could tell that his gait has been different, that he's been taking it easy on his hamstrings, presumably, this year, and he's been slower on the base paths. But yet what happens when you're doing that, if you're taking it easy on your hamstrings and you're putting more stress on your quads, and then that's when all these kinetic chain issues come up. I hope that, honestly, Bregman hasn't been himself lately, and maybe he just needs an extended rest and to get his whole lower body back in order. Everybody else is doing just fine right now, Alex. We can do without you for a little while.
Yeah, I think if you're an Astro fan, I mean, obviously you want Bregman back, but you're looking at it going, okay, what can I pull out of this? That Bregman's gone. Guy's an MVP runner-up a couple years ago. We know Alex Bregman's a great baseball player. What type of hope can I extract from this specific thing? I would say that Alex Bregman hasn't been himself all season. You became the best hitting team in baseball 2 months into the season, 2.5 months into the season, with Alex Bregman basically giving you what for him, Seth, is like a C performance at the plate this year. He's at seven home runs. He's hitting in the 270s somewhere. Like he just has not been normal Alex Bregman this season. So, you know, if you get a replacement level guy in there, you're going to take a dip a little bit, obviously. And whoever you put in there is not going to intimidate nearly as much as Alex Bregman might at the plate. But you should be okay. If you get Kyle Tucker back from whatever he's dealing with right now, you should be fine.
One of our listeners pointed this out. Remember Bregman had the report that he'd gained like 20 pounds of muscle? I'm going to be honest with you. I was never quite clear whether Bregman was being sarcastic or not on that, because he didn't necessarily look a whole
lot same.
Different. He had lost a bunch of weight last year, so I think he came back up to where he was 2 years ago or so. I think he messes with his weight a little bit. I don't know how much the Breggy Bomb salsa has to do with any of this, but he did work out like a madman all winter, and sometimes that can work against you. But he had that hamstring issue. He came into spring training with it. And it's just been kind of a long, never-ending issue for him since the beginning of spring training.
Yep.
So I don't know what the answer is, other than he needs at the very least a little bit of rest and to get that thing right.
Astros start a 4-game set with the White Sox tonight. NBA playoffs last night. The NBA playoffs are starting to get a little more interesting now. Two series last night that were 2-2 going into the game, and in both of the games last night, the road team won, and I think we start with Atlanta and Philly, where Philly had a 26-point lead in this game and coughed it up and lost the game. They had a 13-point lead late in the game against the Hawks in Game 4. Doc Rivers just shouldn't even get on the plane to go to Atlanta. Like, they should just give Doc Rivers the night off in Game 6, because there's no lead that's safe, apparently, with him coaching this basketball team. Atlanta takes a 3-2 lead in that series, winning a road game in Game 5. Game 5, always the most pivotal game, especially when it's tied at 2. And then last night, Seth, with no Kawhi Leonard, look, nobody's as critical of playoff P as I am, Paul George. But this series with the Clippers and the Jazz, the Clippers go into Utah last night with no Kawhi Leonard, and they win 119-111. And Paul George was sublime last night. He was great. He was really, really good. It was very strange to see Paul George playing well in a playoff situation, especially without help from Kawhi Leonard. One of the two biggest postseason frauds is going to move on to the Western Conference Finals. Either Paul George or the Utah Jazz. If Kawhi Leonard is going to be out for an extended period of time, which it sounds like he is, they're really fearful that this is an ACL issue with him. One of the two biggest postseason frauds is going to find their way into the Western Conference Finals against a possibly Chris Paul-less Phoenix Suns, Paul George or the Utah Jazz. And I don't like either of them.
Boy, at this point, I know there hasn't been any new news on this unless I missed it, but I would be shocked if Chris Paul is out for an extended amount of time, because I think it would mean that he would have not had the vaccine, or he did have the vaccine and he was one of the people that contracted it after having the vaccine.
Yeah.
But it just seems unlikely at this point that he's not available for that. And at the very least, he's not available for most of the series. Maybe he has to miss the first couple of games.
Yeah, if you're a Suns fan, and I know there's so many of you out there in Houston, Texas, but if you're a Suns player, whatever, you're rooting for the Jazz to go into L.A. and take Game 6 so the thing goes to 7. So you're stretching that series out. If the Clippers close out the Jazz, they're going to start they're going to start the Western Conference Finals on Sunday, probably.
I settled in on Chris Paul as being the former Rocket that I want to do the best in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now that
I like Chris Paul.
Although the Hawks coming back on the Sixers after the Sixers' own social media account was boasting about how awesome they were in the middle of the game.
I didn't see that.
Capella a little bit. Yeah, at some point the Sixers said something like they showed Clint Capella on Joel Embiid and said something about, is this where we're supposed to get tired? Because I think did Capella say something about those guys getting tired?
Yes.
And then boom, the Hawks came back from a 26-point deficit.
26-point deficit. Yeah.
To win that game. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As much as I love spicy Clint Capella, I need Chris Paul to win, for one, because, look, he's had bad luck at times. Even though he's had some great playoff performances, there's kind of a knock on him as just not being able to get it done in the playoffs. Just for that, but also because it would make me feel like we actually did win the championship that year.
Yeah.
Sean, it's just, if Chris Paul's hamstring had just stayed healthy through the entire Warriors series, the Rockets would have won the championship.
I like to think that way, too. I would have loved to have sat next to Daryl Morey at the game last night. And here's why I was thinking of Daryl Morey. Daryl Morey is the president of basketball operations for the Sixers these days. And I remember I went to lunch with Daryl one time, and one of the things that he said at this specific lunch, we got talking about some of the numbers, the analytics. You would have loved it, stat nerd Seth. It was a very enlightening conversation. But one of the things he said, and this is several years ago, so I don't know if the numbers have changed on this at all, but several years ago, Daryl said there's a statistical rule that if you lead in an NBA game by 1 point per minute remaining in the game, in other words, going into the fourth quarter, you lead by 12 points with 12 minutes left in the game. If you lead by 1 point per minute left in the game up until the final 2 minutes where everything's all super varied because a basket here and but up until about the final 2 or 3 minutes, if you lead by 1 point per minute remaining, you win 85% of the time in the NBA.
So with 3 minutes remaining, if I'm up by three, then I'm going to win 85% of those games.
Yeah, if you're up by six with 6 minutes to go, and I'm thinking of like the game last night when they're up by 26. Like, okay, Daryl probably feels like they've got a 99.9999999% win probability.
You're up by 26 with 24 minutes remaining. Was that at the half that they were up by 26?
I think it was sometime in the third quarter. I don't remember exactly. I was watching the Astro game more intently, But I was thinking about that as that lead was dwindling. I'm just thinking about Daryl's rule that he told me. I'm like, boy, this rule is getting a gigantic dump taken on it right now by Trae Young.
I'll tell you, I'll go back to the, you know, you need one A. Well, I almost used, I guess we're allowed to say the butthole word that starts with an A, but we're technically allowed to say that on the radio. You need one jerk per team. Yeah. You need at least one jerk on a team.
Yeah.
Like that's actually a taskmaster. It might be the head coach. It might be one of the players. You know, you look at the Spurs, for instance. Popovich has always been that guy. Golden State Warriors have Draymond Green. But then the ultimate guys that won a bunch of championships in that way were Michael Jordan
Give it to me again. Give it to
what? No, was I might be having a mini stroke here or something. Kobe. Gosh, man, I kept wanting to say Kyrie Irving instead of Kobe Bryant, and I couldn't get
I'm
it.
Proud
out
of
my
you
brain.
That you got it out. Yeah,
and I was so stuck. Kobe Bryant, whomever it might be.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I guess when your ringleader is Shirley Temple drinking Joel Embiid, I don't think maybe you have the killer instinct on that team. Who's the big jerk on the 76ers that would actually drive them towards the championship?
I don't know. I don't know that it's Ben Simmons. I like watching the Sixers lose because I've long held the point of view that you can't win a championship with a guy who's your primary ball handler whose range is like 5 feet from the basket. Like Ben Simmons cannot shoot. So I actually like. I'm trying to think of who would be the a-hole on the Sixers? I don't know.
It's not a hard and fast rule, but more times than not,
yeah.
Especially the teams that kind of are dynastic, they've got at least one a-hole.
Yep.
It's not the ideal. Nobody's going to write a book about like, well, this is the way you achieve success. It's just sometimes you need at least one guy who's a genuine pain in the ass, and it's not always your best player, but it's a guy that people respect. Like Draymond's the example there with Golden State. Steve Kerr, underrated a-hole. I mean, because he looks like Doogie Howser, people forget that he routinely leads the league in technicals, that he's pouty, that he likes to act about the superiority of the NBA over the NFL.
He got into fist fights with Michael Jordan when they were teammates.
Michael Jordan beat Steve Kerr down when
I called
teammates.
It a fist fight.
I don't think you call it a fist fight.
It was a fist fight, just Kerr didn't fight back. That's
Michael,
all.
Michael, stop being mean to me. Stop it, Michael.
You're listening to KILT and KILT HD2, an Odyssey station. Download the Odyssey app and bring us with you wherever you go.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.